I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo,
a gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Well, welcome back to another episode of The Memo. It is Thursday, October 22nd, 2015. Thank you all for tuning in. This is Brad Locke, one of your hosts, and the other host is not W. Derek Russell today. He's out again. I think he's got a Back to the Future Day hangover or something. I don't know.
Yes.
But sitting in his chair is Lauren Wood, a photographer extraordinaire for the Journal. Lauren,
hi, Brad.
Welcome back.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here this morning.
I'm happy you're here, too. I mean, I like Derek and all, but
yeah.
I kind of like you in that chair a little better because you, like, pronounce my name right
and don't
make fun of my hair. And
oh, okay. Yeah, I'm nice to you.
Yeah, you're much nicer.
I bake cakes.
And you bake cakes and bring them to work.
Like, Brad, eat this piece of cake.
Yes.
Eat these brownies.
Derek never brings me cake. No. So, Lauren's going to be in here with us today, helping me out.
Yep.
Got a good show coming up. We got a lot to talk about. We got Scott Morris's movie review. We're going to talk about some stuff the city of Tupelo is doing to kind of cut costs using some cool technology. We got Tupelo beautification from Zach Orsborn. And what's coming up this weekend?
Yep.
Derek usually will handle that, but he's not here. But he has stuff. Mm-hmm. He did his work before he took off to do whatever he's doing. Yeah, we got a full show today. Again, like I said, I like having Lauren in here, although she does kind of make me feel old. We were talking before the show about how she was born the year the Berlin Wall came down. We were discussing the movie that Scott reviewed.
Bridge of Spies, yeah.
Yeah, Bridge of Spies. And I vividly remember when that happened.
Uh-huh.
Lauren obviously does not.
That's a baby.
Yeah, so anyway. We got a lot to get to, so let's get to it. Okay, so we're going to bring in another person much younger than I am. Here, Zach Orsborn. What's up, Zach?
Not much. What about you?
I'm all right.
Yeah.
Just feeling old today. by the way, Lauren is really excited about this new iPhone update.
So excited. 150 new emojis.
Taco emojis. I mean, that's...
Unicorns. Like
Zach
said. They
have unicorns?
The middle finger. If you want to get really mad at somebody.
Yeah. I know a few people who use that one a lot.
There's a ton. It's kind of overwhelming, actually, though, going through. You're like, there's so many new ones. They have every flag also. Like every country.
Single flag.
It's...
I'm gonna use all
pages
of
flags. Yeah.
Dang.
When I get home tonight, I'll be killing probably a lot of time doing something like going through that. But anyway, I haven't got the update yet. But Zach has an update.
Mm-hmm.
It's called a segue, Lauren.
Oh.
on the keeping Tupelo beautiful, the recovery from the tornado, the projects they have going on. Mm-hmm. Had a story in today's journal at djournal.com just about the different neighborhood associations. Just trying to, help the area recover. I mean, you got a lot of trees that are gone forever, and so it's kind of a stark landscape in parts of Tupelo, especially over like in Joyner neighborhood, Sharon Hills and those areas. So kind of where are they at right now in this process, Zach?
Right. Well, Sherry Cochran with Keep America Beautiful, she got a
Keep Tupelo Beautiful.
She got a grant through Keep America Beautiful for $5,000, and she added $1,000 of her own funding to give $2,000 to each of the three neighborhoods affected by the tornado, which is Sharon Hills, Joyner, and Bel Air.
Right.
And each neighborhood has their own certain project they want to do. Sharon Hills, they are mainly focusing on rebuilding their screen between commercial properties because all the trees that were gone that was shielding them.
Right.
They're all gone, so they want to be more secluded. And Joyner is about to plant a bunch of flowering shrubs to kind of beautify. And Bel Air is, they're going to work on the entrance to their neighborhood.
Okay. So there's going to be a lot of trees going in the ground.
Yeah, lots of trees. The Sharon Hills, they just planted 177 trees. And they were all free to the neighbors through the grant from Keep Tupelo Beautiful.
Okay. One thing that really caught my attention here is this edible forest that they're wanting to put us in. Which neighborhood is that? That's the Sharon Hills.
Sharon Hills.
Explain a little bit about that.
There's a part in Sharon Hills they call the Swamp.
Mm-hmm.
And once drainage projects are complete from the city, they're going to have a little... kind of like a little park with edible forest. They'll have some blueberry-like fruit trees, and they're also going to have picnic tables, benches, and a grill. Kind of like a joining spot.
Yeah, kind of like a state park kind of setup.
It'll be really cool. Well,
they're also the ones that have the little library, too.
I thought it was so cool. If you go up Sharon Hills, there's a huge, huge hill. Mm-hmm. And right at the top is like this red mini library.
Yeah, I've read about those before. It's a pretty cool deal.
Yeah, it really catches your eye. And they have a bench by there, and they have a bunch of children's books in the libraries that they can circulate throughout. And Joyner is also going to add two of those. I forgot to put that in the article, but they're going to add two of those. Sharon Hill is also planning on doing like a neighborhood red box. So it'll be like the mini library, but it's with DVDs, and they'll have a passcode. And
I want to move over there.
Yeah, I was like, I need to. Well, are there houses for sale over here?
Nice.
But it's really nice.
Really cool. So does everybody, you kind of hinted in your story that maybe some people don't agree 100% on how the money should be spent, but is there pretty much everybody's kind of on the same page?
Yeah.
As far as that goes?
Mainly it's for beautification. Which is kind of Keep Tupelo Beautiful's mission. Some of them aren't necessarily rebuilding trees because there's a the tornado recovery plan, which is coming out with phase one in fall 2015. Mm-hmm. That'll be where most of the trees come from. But the grant through Keep Tupelo Beautiful is more for like separate projects. They thought a long time about what they wanted to do for each neighborhood. And Sherry Cochran kind of guided them for that.
I mean, I don't think you can overstate the importance of this because, I mean, I'll drive through Joyner all the time. Yeah. It's not far from where I live. And you used to be you drive up, what's that road? You're on Lumpkin, you go on the tracks, and then you hang a right just past the tracks. And I forget the name of that road now. But
is that Clayton?
It may be.
Yeah.
Or it goes up to Clayton. But anyway, it's going through there. It used to be just this big canopy of trees, and it was really cool to go just drive through there, especially on a sunny day. Now, the first time I drove through there after the tornado, it was like a totally different place.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure everyone wants to get their neighborhood back to...
Exactly.
Somewhat back to how it was, with the trees especially.
Yeah.
So. And in Joyner, once the trees were all gone, the landscape changed because they were used to planting with shade plants.
Right.
And so now they have to completely redo all landscaping and get shrubs that grow in the sun.
Wow. Well, it's a good thing they're doing. Looking forward to seeing how that develops. Zach can read his story on djournal.com in today's journal. Follow Zach on Twitter. Remind me.
At the Daily Zach. No, sorry. At the Daily _ Zach.
Even Zach can't remember it. It's the underscore like that throws me off. Yeah, but at the Daily _ Zach with a K.
Yes.
All right. Good deal, Zach. Thank you, man.
Thanks.
Okay, let's bring in Mr. William Moore now, our crime reporter, and he covers other things as well. William, hello.
Howdy do.
I'm good.
And this story actually does have a crime component because police cars were one of the vehicles that have been installed with black boxes.
Yeah, they got black boxes now in the city government vehicles. A few of them. There's a story in today's journal that William did. Some city vehicles will have these little black boxes installed by Verizon to monitor a vast amount of data, to collect data on the cars and what they're doing and how many miles they go, where they go, I guess, if there's any issues, diagnostic stuff. It's pretty cool, William. What's kind of the main thrust of what they're wanting to get out of this?
The main thrust they're trying to go with is fuel mileage and maintenance.
Okay.
I mean, the boxes collect, I mean, like you said, a vast amount of data. If it's modern vehicles and the computers record almost everything.
Yeah.
But basically all they're looking for now is ways to improve fuel mileage, whether it's, turning them off and letting them sit or making shorter routes. And they're also looking at ways to improve maintenance because the new boxes, in your car, when the check engine light comes on, it just flashes and lets the drivers know. These boxes will actually send an email to the city shop, tell them exactly what's wrong so they can figure out, all right, well, is this just saying it needs an oil change? We can do that, over the weekend.
Yeah.
Or is this a part that's actually broken? Do we need to go ahead and order it, have it ready, and pull the truck off the road today?
That, to me, is the coolest part of this. I mean, this, the diagnostics, and immediately somebody at the shop or wherever can know, okay, we have an issue, we can fix it before it becomes a problem while this guy's on the road.
I mean, that's one of the – I mean, they're looking for ways to save money, and that's one of the most beneficial ways they can save money just by being able to like you say, figure out something's wrong with the vehicle and fix it before it turns into a major problem where, you know, right. after, you know, it's one thing to replace the parts, another thing to replace a whole engine.
Right, right, exactly. A total of 13 boxes were installed Wednesday, dump trucks, police vehicles, a variety. It's going to be like it's like a 60-day trial. Verizon is providing these black boxes, and I guess if they like it and can get a cost analysis that's favorable, they'll go ahead and make this a permanent
thing. They'll look at going further, and if it does go further, I mean, there's the boxes also have GPS systems in them, so they can actually track where vehicles go. Talking to the public works director, I mean, he would love to see that aspect.
Yeah,
you know, especially like in the brush pickup trucks, the trucks that actually pick up brush,
right?
And also in the street sweepers, so he can actually monitor where they've been, make sure. And so if somebody calls and says, "All right, well, I got this pile of brush, it's been sitting out in my yard, the brush truck hadn't been by in 6 weeks," he can actually pull it up on the computer and say, "No, the truck came by last Thursday at 2:45 p.m.
Yeah.
It offers a lot of benefits. You know, it'll just be up to the city to decide, you know, whether or not they want to continue and actually move forward with the program. And if they do move forward, it may or may not be with Verizon, because there are a lot of different companies that offer similar services.
Chuck Williams, the public works director here in Tupelo, said he doesn't want this to be a Big Brother type thing, although it's kind of hard for it not to be. I mean, especially if you're tracking where the cars are going. I mean, I'm not saying city government employees are like goofing off or something, but people are people, you know?
They are.
Sometimes that happens.
But you know, only the department heads are going to be able to see that data, where the vehicles went. Like I said, the main thing they're looking for right now is the fuel and the maintenance part.
Yeah.
So basically they're telling their employees not to do anything differently. You know, if they're driving a dump truck and they normally go somewhere and leave it idling while they're doing this other work, they want them to continue doing that just to see if there could be a fuel savings doing things a little differently. You know, it'll be down the road that they would actually look at where folks go and when they go, and if they're in the, I mean, because it's amazing some of the things the technology, these boxes can record. Combining the mapping and the data, they could actually tell if somebody ran a stop sign.
Wow, pretty good. And I was going to ask too, if it's, how similar is it to the black boxes in airplanes? Like if there's a wreck or something involving one of these vehicles?
Well, it'll record all that information as well, and you get into further capabilities of the black box, it can actually get down to the point where it can tell if the driver's wearing their seatbelt or not. It can, they can actually adjust it where there's like key fobs where each driver basically signs into a vehicle, and so they would know exactly who is in the vehicle at any given time.
Wow.
There are a lot of options with the technology here.
That is kind of Big Brotherish though, but I kind of like the potential. I don't know. Anyway, you can read the story in today's journal by William Moore. William, appreciate your time, man.
Glad to be here.
All right. Well, up next we have Scott Morris, who are here to talk about the movie they were filming yesterday, The Birthplace. I know this one is geared towards sixth graders, so it's for a younger audience. I think it mostly about like trying to show them this is Elvis and this is why he's important, right?
Well, kind of. Trying to use Elvis as a role model and use him kind of as a, I don't know, an object lesson. And, you know, there's no denying his success. Mm-hmm. And there's no denying that he made certain choices along the way in his childhood, even when he was in Tupelo, as far as learning music and making a decision to ask questions and to, I mean, along with natural talent, you know, definitely the man had a drive that he applied to become world famous. Now, some of the choices he made after he became world famous or on the route, those are up for question and debate. Mm-hmm. And so I think that part of the reason, part of their goal at The Birthplace is to use him as an object lesson for some of the great things that can come about when you follow your dreams and some things that maybe you may want to be very careful about your choices.
Definitely. Well, I know that this is their second one. The first one was geared towards third graders.
That is correct. Okay. And so this one's going to be shown to sixth graders when they come to visit The Birthplace. Other ones has already been shown. Chuck McIntosh wrote and directed the first one, and this one here is Glenn Allison. And then so we had a crew yesterday out at the Overlook doing some filming when we were there. I had a photographer with me. I can't remember her name.
That was me. Yeah.
And we were up in the morning. And what was interesting about it is you don't think about that being a loud place, because when you're up there, it's a very contemplative place. You have a very nice view and overlook over the whole town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they kept being thwarted by just trucks going down Main Street not far away. Yeah. Motorcycles, trucks, and then as we our favorites, the trains and the whistles going through. And so they're trying to record dialogue. And like Jennifer Collins, the director, said, you know, when you're up here, you don't think about the noise. But when you're recording, that noise is everywhere.
Oh, yeah. And it was interesting, I think, seeing behind the scenes, too, like while they were filming, you know, getting all set up and then rehearsing their lines. I think that was interesting to get to see.
Yeah, but it was a, you know, I put one of my headlines, I put lights, camera, action. There were no lights. Yeah. I realized now what I was thinking about, because you use that phrase, but they're using natural light. And they're trying to prevent light using diffusers to people standing up and just out of shot, wearing their arms out, like sometimes photographers force me to do.
Yeah.
It's happened before, you know.
Brad, you missed another opportunity to further your acting career.
Oh, yeah, I did. Hey, I should have been in on that. Yeah, I don't know if Scott listened to it yesterday, but I had a role in a short, I guess, film, you'd call it. It's coming soon.
Oh, fantastic.
It's about the Palmer Home for Children. It's more like a promotional thing.
We know Glenn used to work for the Palmer Home. He used to write Glenn Allison used to write their magazine.
Yeah, and I've written a couple of things for their magazine back several years ago. So it's a good organization. Yeah, maybe I'll get the next Elvis movie. We'll see.
Well, I know, and it's going to continue filming today, too.
Today and tomorrow and Friday.
Okay,
and,
so for the rest of the week.
Like apparently, like a class from Milam, where Elvis went, is going to be in the movie. Because the plot of the story is that a kid played by Carter Meharry breaks away from his tour group. And so some kid from Milam will be there tomorrow as kind of like extras.
Yeah. Oh, that's fun.
So, supposed to be done in the spring. And so I did the story on the first one, never have seen it. But Carter Meharry, who is like the kid in this, 12-year-old kid in this one, he was in that first movie. And he said that people, like when his mother teaches and when he visits her at school, the fourth graders say, I saw you in that movie. So he's got a little bit of fame from it. Yes. And this will be a little bit more fame.
Definitely. And I think it's cool that they're doing this for the students in Tupelo, because it is a big part of where they're, you know, about Tupelo's history and where they're from.
That's cool. And I think also, you know, the cast and the crew, not all of them, but have local connections. And so it's like people around here making a little, spreading the Elvis wealth around, you know, to get it made. So using local talent. So that's cool.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll segue from one movie to another.
Yeah.
And I'm going to interview you because I went on Monday and saw Bridge of Spies, too.
All right, well, you can do the review. You can do it.
So it's kind of a star, Steven Spielberg, written by the Coen brothers. That's Tom Hanks is the lead. It's you know, kind of even going into it, I was like, all right, Tom Hanks is in it. I know it's probably going to be a good movie.
Yeah, and it had some nice press before when I didn't even read any reviews. You just hear kind of nice things about it. But Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks get together, and then I didn't know the Coen brothers were involved.
No,
until
the credits were. Yeah,
and I saw wow, that was interesting, because you know, you think of them as more like bizarre, wacky comedy.
Yeah.
But then they've done some. I mean, Fargo, the original Fargo, it had some wacky moments, but it was really a drama. I took my daughter, my 13-year-old daughter, and she said what was fun about this was it is a kind of a dark story at times, but there's some humor in it that kind of brightens the mood.
Yes.
And I wonder if that was Coen brother work. This is set in the Cold War, back when we knew who our enemies were.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of a refreshing, when all our hate was directed into one place, you know, it was easier for us back then.
Life was less complicated.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, but that's what's nice about this movie is you can see that it is going back in time, but the lessons apply now.
Mm-hmm.
Hanks' character, James Donovan, is a lawyer who doesn't want to represent this accused spy, but once he's kind of forced into it by his bosses and the government, he gives the best defense possible thing, and that's the way you show American values, is to give him the best defense possible.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can imagine if you know, if there were an accused spy walking through the streets of any town in America, and how people might react to that, you know.
Yeah.
And so people weren't happy. and there were threats of violence to the home. And this is a true story.
Mm-hmm.
And Donovan was an insurance lawyer. And so everybody else wanted this man dead, Abel dead, and not everybody, but I mean, that was the popular opinion. At least that comes across in the movie, and you have a hard time believing it was different in real life.
Yeah.
But he says, no, actually, you know, we're spying on them, they're spying on us, what if they catch one of our guys? And we know it's going to happen, we know it from history, and we know it from the way the story is set up. You know, as you're introduced to this U2 pilot in the beginning, you kind of know eventually he's going to end up in a Soviet prison. You see it happening. So we know Donovan's on the right track here.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a private citizen who serves his country very well, admirably, in the face of a terrible odds and situations. And he's we spend time with him in East Germany while they're building the Berlin Wall, or maybe just shortly after. But
right.
It's
so it's set in the 60s.
50s.
50s, mm-hmm. Sorry.
Okay. It's all right.
Yeah, brush up on my history.
You're here for your looks, not for your history.
Well, you know, Lauren was born the year that it came down. I was born well after it went up, so I mean.
All right.
Anyway.
But it seems like kind of an ongoing theme, too, is like throughout the movie is kind of stand up for what you believe in, no matter what anybody else thinks.
Yeah.
And they kind of play on that, I think, in a couple of different ways. So.
And, you know, and you get the sense that also it's not just stand up for what you believe in, but you stand up for American principles.
I mean,
things that the ideals that we all pledge allegiance to when we do it. I mean, not all, but the stuff that we hold ideal is what it means to be a good American. And, I mean, this guy, Tom Hanks and James Donovan, of course, Tom Hanks, no matter what he does, even when he was in Perdition, when he was a killer, he was an everyman killer. He can't help it. And in this, he's an everyman hero. Uh-huh. And it really, I found that you're watching it all the way through and it's engaging and he's funny and he sticks to his guns and all that in the face of Soviet government, American government, East German government. But then in the end, I don't want to spoil this, but there's an ending about how his, like the last 5 minutes, we find out how he reacted and how his family reacted and what he went on to do later on.
Yeah.
I mean, all of a sudden you put like a just big gigantic exclamation point to James Donovan, hero. And I highly recommend it. It's it's a fun movie. You don't think it might would be a fun movie being like a political thriller set in the Cold War days, but it's not really a thriller. It's a procedural almost of just lawyering, doing lawyer stuff, and just negotiating and getting thwarted, but keeping at it. It's a testament to persistence and ideals.
And it's also 2.5 hours, or like 2 hours and 20 minutes, and it didn't seem long at all. There was no point where it dragged. I felt like it was...
Well-paced. And humor, like I said, humor throughout.
Yeah.
And like, you know, you find yourself, I think, liking Abel, Mark Rylance, who plays him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just he plays him in such a dry fashion that you think, well, you know, yeah, he's a spy, so yeah, we hate him, but he's all right.
<You know>? Yep. Definitely.
Well, if I needed a Soviet uncle, it could be him.
Yeah.
Soviet uncle.
Excellent. Well, thanks for coming in today, Scott. Appreciate it.
I'm glad you're here to help us make this podcast great again.
That sounds like a great movie, Lauren. I need to go see it.
Mm-hmm. You should. I would definitely recommend it.
But I have a newborn, so it's kind of hard to go to the movies with a wife.
Maybe when it comes on Redbox.
Maybe we can get a Redbox in our neighborhood, like the people over in Sharon Hills or wherever. That'd be sweet.
Yeah.
But hey, if you're not going to the movies this weekend, there is other stuff to do.
Yes.
It's almost Halloween, so you got some Halloween themed things going on. You got TCT's Haunted Theater continuing this weekend, starting Saturday at 7 at the Lyric Theater downtown. TCT Off-Broadway, they've got a youth production. It's called...
Monsters Under the Bed.
Monsters Under the Bed. There it is. 7:30. That's actually next weekend, not this weekend. But we've got a story in it, story about it in today's journal from Derek Russell. So give yourself a heads up on that and see what that's all about. Newsboy is going to be in town tonight, 7 o'clock at Bancorth South Arena. As a preacher's kid that grew up in the 80s and 90s, Newsboys are very well known.
I don't know who they are. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. they've had a...
they recognize their music.
I don't know how much of the original band is still together, because they've been together since at least the early 90s, at least. Yeah, I know now Michael Tate is now the lead singer. Used to be somebody else, the bald-headed Australian guy. I forget his name. But Michael Tate, former member of DC Talk, is now the lead vocalist there. So Newsboys will be in town tonight.
85.
85, that long ago. It's 30 years. Man. Yeah, wow. I am old. It's today's theme. If you haven't caught on, I'm old.
Hey, there's another theme today.
Yeah, what? Oh, that's right.
It's Lauren Appreciation Day.
Hashtag Lauren Appreciation Day. Go look it up on Twitter.
Right.
It's trending around the world.
So go appreciate a Lauren in your life today.
Yes, we appreciate Lauren being on the show today. And
we do.
Co-hosting. And we appreciate her every
fun.
Day, actually.
Yeah.
Appreciate your cakes. Tell you that much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She made me a nice birthday cake. I appreciated it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was tasty. We'll just ignore the fact it's technically about some Brazilian singer named Lauren something.
Yes.
We'll just go with
Fifth Harmony of Brazil.
Yeah. Lauren Wood Appreciation Day, technically.
It is here at the Journal.
What? Yeah, that's right.
Get that trending on Twitter. How about it? Hey, by the way, speaking of Twitter, you can follow the show on Twitter at DJournalMemo. Follow the Journal itself. And get all the latest breaking news updates and whatnot at D Journal Now. I'm on Twitter at Brad Locke.
Mm-hmm.
I was just reveling in the fact that no one was
Brad
adding
Locke Appreciation
was,
Day.
No, that Derek wasn't here to add the E. I'll say at Brad Locke, he goes E.
E.
See, this is again why I like Lauren being in that chair because she doesn't. She doesn't.
Uh-huh.
What?
Appreciate.
Yeah.
Appreciate who?
You appreciate
me.
Lauren.
I do.
Yeah.
Yes. I appreciate Lauren not. Making fun of my last name like Derek does. Anyway, but yes, Lauren, you're on Twitter as well.
Mm-hmm. I am at Wood LAU too. My latest tweet is a whole bunch of the new emojis.
Taco emojis.
So
you'll know if you have the new system or not, because if you can't see your tweet.
It's just be a bunch of...
You need to update.
Yeah,
alien faces.
Nonsense, yeah. But Chris is on the Twitter as well, at Chris Kiefer. And I think I got all the Twitter handles knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
Derek?
Yeah, he's not here. That's what he gets. By the way, Lauren is still riding on cloud nine from that Michigan State game. She's a big Sparty fan.
That's right,
fan,
go green.
And that was probably
the
single craziest ending I've ever seen to a college football game, ever.
And I know we've talked about it, sorry, but the poor kid,
The punter?
No,
the kid
Michigan
that
State kid.
Oh, the kid that scored the touchdown.
Yes, the poor Michigan punter, because the poor kid received death threats, which is ridiculous.
Stupid.
But... the kid who made the winning touchdown for Michigan State, he got
dog pile.
He said it actually wasn't the dog pile.
Okay.
He said it was the Michigan kid tackling him, but it like broke his hip and he had to go. But he said they took him to the hospital in Ann Arbor and like they rushed him into surgery and he's going to be out for the rest of the season, but he's recovering well. So I just feel so, like he's going to be remembered in Spartan history
forever.
He's
a legend now.
Yeah, he's
matter.
A legend, but the poor kid, he's out there for the rest of the season. But he said he's like, I would do it all over again.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Oh. Anyway, speaking of college football, Ole Miss and Mississippi State, you can listen to Paris Alford and Logan Lowry talk about those two teams. The new podcast will be available today, double coverage. Parrish covers Ole Miss, Logan covers State, so they'll take a look at where the teams are right now, both 5-2 heading into SEC games this weekend. So you can check that out at doublecoverage.djournal.com, or you can check it out on iTunes or a podcast app on if you have an Android or something like that. So good stuff from Parrish and Logan there. Also, I need to remind y'all about Thrive Marketing. It's a full-service digital marketing company located in Tupelo, providing websites, search engine optimization, social media management, email, and text messaging services for local businesses, thrive.ms. And Lauren, you got something to remind people about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have an upcoming event, the Bridal Journal Expo, for, we're kind of plugging this for all brides in the area. We're going to have vendors, anywhere from photographers to cake dresses, we're going to have it all. It's going to be Sunday, November 15th from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Kingfisher Lodge in Verona. Beautiful venue. It's going to be really great. Tickets are $20, and you can sign up at bridaljournal.ms/expo.
Good deal.
Yeah.
All right. Lauren, thanks again for filling in.
Thanks, Brad.
We'll have to do it again soon.
I appreciate you. Hashtag Brad Appreciation Day.
You can get that going on Twitter as well.
Get a new trend.
Nice. Uh-huh. All right, we'll be back on Monday. I guess Derek will be back too, so we'll see. Until then, have a great weekend.